Welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at kuci.org, and we're on iTunes at College Radio. Today is Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and my guest today for the entire hour is Norman Olstad. Norman is the author of Crazy for the Storm, which was a New York Times bestseller, an Amazon Best Book of the Year, and was published in 15 countries around the world. His work has appeared in Time, Outside, and Men's Journal. He lives in Venice, California with his family, and he's here today to talk about his new novel, French Girl with Mother. Hi, Norman.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome back. You were on a couple years ago with Crazy for the Storm, and it's great to have you back this time with a novel. And perhaps we could begin with you talking a bit about how French Girl with Mother came about.
Well, I actually sat down to write some pieces, nonfiction pieces, based on my travels. I used to travel alone a lot all around Europe and South Pacific, Indonesia. And I had written a piece called Gravity that I published as a Kindle single that is about, it was sort of a follow-up piece to Crazy for the Storm, and I wanted to do some more of those kind of 75 to 100-page pieces, also because then I could get it made into an actual book instead of a Kindle single. And when I sat down to start those pieces, I kept coming across trains that I almost got on but didn't, people that I almost, you know, sort of jumped in the car with but didn't. I had spent some time at a chateau outside of Paris with a family on and off for a couple years. And was when I wrote about that, I kept being more curious about what almost happened, what I thought was going on behind the scenes, these kind of things. So eventually it led to this, well, the shadow life that I could have lived. I was more interested in writing about that at that moment, just at this time of my life. And so I went with it. And then French Girl with Mother is what sort of emerged from that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I found an essay, I guess, that you wrote on LitHub a couple of months ago, which I very much enjoyed. And you talked about the autobiographical aspects of the novel. And so I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about how you lassoed your experience in France and created art out of it. I mean, you know, what did you bring with you? What did you leave? I think sometimes writers, especially when they're using autobiographical material, it can become, I don't know, confusing, or your challenge then is, well, what's interesting here? I lived it, but what will be interesting to the reader?
You know, I may be a little gotten lucky in the sense that having written quite a bit of sort of memoir nonfiction stuff, my book Crazy for the Storm, Gravity, some of the stuff I've done for Outside, I have to take that on. I have to say, okay, you know, these are the 10 things I did with my father in Mexico, and what of these 10 things are linked together so that they don't feel like disparate scenes or unconnected emotionally. And so the exercise of trying to cull through my life in the past for years has sort of prepared me to maybe be, you know, measure that a little better. I also I like to use the germ, the emotion that something real stirs, no matter what, because I think it's important, because when you get deep into fiction, when you get into your piece that you're writing, you need something to reach back to and go, okay, what anchors this? Where, you know, I need something to know where I am in my sort of travels and imagination, I need also an anchor. And so that balance comes naturally to me and is something I really appreciate. So those two things that I've, had to cull through real stuff a lot and figure out what's most interesting. I'm not always right. A lot of times, the editor will help me, sort of say, okay, you got three things like that. Let's just have one of them and bring something new in over here. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit of that when you're doing the either fiction or nonfiction. I mean, I wrote Crazy for the Storm kind of like a novel in the sense of it has a very specific point of view. It's from my 11-year-old eyes, kind of filtered through an adult, but it comes from there, and it's not like a Krakauer where you have all these different broad points of view and historical context. It's very sort of almost like a narrow point of view. So it's a little bit more suited to the novel.
Yeah, in that LitHub essay, you said, and I love this, you said, what I often tapped into was more truthful than what I would have revealed through nonfiction. Unearthing these truths from the hard rock of reality was one of the biggest thrills of writing fiction for me. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, sometimes there's an exchange or something happens in your life. And what it was really about is sort of not there necessarily in the scene, in what happened. And that's the beauty of fiction, is that you can, otherwise in nonfiction you have to say, well, I really thought it was about this. And for me, that kills it right there. I like to paint something and have the reader have an experience. I don't want to tell them what the experience is. So when you get to then say, okay, these are some things that happened to me, and they may be about, poor example is surfing, but really what the surfing was about my relationship with my father. Now, sometimes you can draw that in nonfiction more easily, but things like my experiences I had in Europe, especially in France, they were so nuanced, and they sort of happened, off screen, for lack of a better word. Just they didn't really happen, but I saw how they could have, and I was having that experience. I was like, having emotionally kind of going to a place that wasn't necessarily supported by the actual events. So that's what's exciting, is that you get to go there. In the fiction, you can make people say the thing they didn't say, but you knew or you felt, you believed they wanted to say. And then where would have that gone had they, or had you responded how maybe you really wanted to but didn't? And then that was exciting for me.
Yeah, I love that in fiction, it's not what was said, but what should have been said or what might have been said.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd love to hear you read from French Girl with Mother.
Okay, great. I have a little section right here.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm with Norman Olstad. His new novel is French Girl with Mother, published by Counterpoint. He's about to read.
Okay, we're in Paris at the moment, and just to set it up, it's a young guy, he's a painter, hasn't made it, and he instinctively knows that he's looking for some intensity in life. Some sort of intimate interaction with life that he's never had. And he knows he needs that to sort of break through as an artist, but he doesn't quite know what that means. He's met this woman, and they're sitting at a cafe. We drank a good Bordeaux, and I sketched her while she told me about her studies. Anaïs was a math whiz, working toward a degree in engineering, the only girl in her class. She dated two of the boys and even one of her professors. They all turned out to be too weak, caving in too easily to her. I need a man, she told me, like the shepherd in the storm, who can withstand my violence. In response, I focused on the structure of her face, transposing it to paper, because if I looked into her eyes instead of at the shape of her eyes, or listened too intently to the thrum of passion in her voice, the way it didn't try to hide the grief while she talked about her father now, always away on business. I would fall like the others fell, and it would all end too quickly. I needed days with her, not hours. I could feel myself wanting to blurt things out, private fears and vulnerabilities, and I guess that she provoked this reaction in a lot of people. As much as you need to get close, I warned myself, you had to tread lightly. There was no clear line between befriending her for the purpose of the sketches and falling under her spell. How long have you been traveling, she asked me after ordering a second glass of wine, making me worry how much this little tryst was going to cost me. 3 years, I said, finally putting the sketch pad down. Why, she asked. It was an unexpected question. She seemed to know there was a specific reason I'd left. There's only so much failure one can take, I said. The mountains are much kinder. Ah, that's the sadness I see in there. You're ashamed of being rejected. I nodded. It's not something I like to advertise. So your friends and family don't accept failure as a part of life? No, not really, I said. But it's not really about that. You just have to go make it. Then you have something to talk about. She put her hand on top of mine. This is so different, so totally opposite than how we are. I looked down at our hands. I see that, I said. She slid the sketchbook off the table and began to leaf through it. I had shipped the other books home to Janet, my one and only remaining advocate, and now I wondered what she'd think of Anaïs. The way she touched me and looked into my eyes so freely, even gratuitously, doing and saying whatever came to her, ironic one moment, highly sensitive the next. She seemed to be many things rolled into one, bold and sweet and vicious. You're obviously talented, Anaïs said, looking up from the book. What's the problem? I don't know, I said. Technically, I'm sound. The copies I made of Degas, Wyeth, Van Gogh, to name a few, they blew a lot of minds. My voice turned low and deep. But with my own stuff, apparently something's always missing. I just try to get the lines and the mood, a couple simple things. That's all I'm after. You want to be classic, she said. At least rooted there, I responded. The second glass of wine came, and I lit another cigarette for her. She narrowed her eyes, as if trying to find me through the fumes. I have an idea, Nathan, she said.
That's it. Thank you so much. That was Norman Olstad reading from French Girl with Mother. So much I want to ask you about. I was curious if you were a painter like your protagonist, Nathan, and if not, why you chose painting.
I'm not a painter. I always been interested in artists and have, through the years, forever seemed to read biographies about artists just for fun. I was curious about their lives and, you know, their process. And I noticed when I first got into writing that painting, I guess a lot of art, but painting especially, maybe sculpting too, had a similar, something was, there was a sort of kinship with writing between the two. And then as I read more, I read about how Hemingway was heavily influenced by Cézanne, and then there's been a lot of other examples. And so when I started writing this as nonfiction, then kind of floated into fiction and decided to go with it, I like the physicality of painting, and I felt like I could understand the process. At least I could make an argument for one artist's process based on all the things I've read and my own writing and that process, and know that, yes, that could be true, you know, especially I did a lot of extra research to sort of make sure, but in my bones, I kind of knew, okay, there's, you know, and I have artist friends here in Venice, especially, that I talk to all the time, and we talk about the same things and always go, wow, it's almost the same. So I felt confident, you know, becoming the artist, I like the physicality of it, and it it opened up a way for the character to look at things. It justified a way for the character to look at people, things, have experiences in a sort of unique way, something that I thought was a sort of intriguing way. I guess that's how it evolved.
Hmm. I was curious also about the character of Wes, who is there for a little bit early on. And when he just seemed, I don't know, I recognized him somehow. Maybe we all have Wes's in our lives, but where did he come from?
Well, he's somewhat based on a real person. And I don't want to go too far with that, but and he's a reflection of my grandfather, who's mentioned in the book too. His name wasn't Wes, but the actual Wes that I knew, I didn't have as close a relationship with him as I wrote in the book, but I had that with my grandfather, and I've had it with sort of other people, so I kind of, you know, made a composite and channeled it into this guy who I kind of knew around, and who shared something that I thought Nathan shared, the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know how deliberate it was, but I look back, that seems like what it was.
And what about Anaïs? Was she based on the French woman you knew in France? And regardless, maybe talk a little bit about creating a composite character or basing a character on someone you knew. What do you keep? What do you leave behind?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I really, in some ways in this book, and just probably for myself, I don't know if anybody's listening, but I'm making an argument for the idea of books, fiction coming from life more. Maybe it feels like that was happening more in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and then it sort of, you know, like anything, there's trends and different things are what's in vogue and so forth. And I feel like I wanted to bring it back to some of my favorite experiences with James Salter a lot of names, but where you go, okay, this is life. You know, I'm getting a feel of someone's life. It doesn't mean it actually happened, but it's real, and this comes from life. I was just thinking of Joan Didion. Even though she's writing nonfiction, the way a lot of her stuff is written, it has like a fictional flavor to it, but it's real life. And so I guess that's a way to circle back into that Anaïs is of a person I know and a group of people I know. It's definitely of them, and there's specifics that I draw from, because I think that's important. There's specific things that I distilled and sort of amplified, because I thought, for me, those are the things that kind of hit me the hardest, that stayed with me the most and went the deepest, so that I would, you know, then you sort of naturally would then sort of sharpen that in the character. So, it's of real life, and this story did not happen, but it definitely could have.
Hmm.
I would argue that it easily could have.
So what about the emotional truth of it? Because it felt like, you know, as you said, it didn't happen this way, but emotionally it could have.
Yeah. The emotional truth is a few. One is that for me, it's sort of like a carryover from Crazy for the Storm, believe it or not, which sort of thematically was about that the storm, going into the storm, facing the storm, getting churned in its energy is what it's about. And it's the same thing for life, you know, outside of an extreme circumstance, like in Crazy for the Storm. You know, this guy, to make art, he needs to become intimate with life. You can't just kind of peer at it. Maybe some can, but my argument is that this is where it comes from. It comes from a full engagement. And it doesn't, you know, I could imagine people reading the book and saying, oh, don't do that. But that's the challenge, is that, yes, in the end, it's good to go, not make mistakes where, you know, you're going to die or you're purposely hurting somebody, but don't worry about that part of it. Go into where your curiosity is and what might even seem dangerous, because it's going to test you. And he has to do this. And so the emotional truth there is that I've found that to be the richest parts of my life that have, just on a personal level, given me the most insight and satisfaction. And then artistically, I wrote about it, I think, a little bit in that Lit Hub essay, where, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to me as a writer and as a person is falling on my face after a breakup. And, you know, I just kind of fell apart. I literally fell on my face and broke my tooth, like 10 teeth, and it knocked me out, and I had these dreams while I was knocked out. Anyway, after that, I was a different writer. I was a much better writer. So I guess that's the emotional truth.
Did you keep notes back then?
Yeah, I did. In not always the most direct ways. I mean, sometimes, yeah, I wrote down the dream that I had and put little, like, a sentence or two, sort of about how, you know, like, okay, that I was connecting to this or that. Yeah, I do keep notes, little notes. I don't journal. I probably should, but I feel like I actually don't have time, or I'm burned out on writing, so I can't really journal.
Because
yes. I just don't want to, like, deal with words at a certain point in the day.
Yeah, I hear you. And the prologue, you know, prologues are controversial to some extent. Well, let me just say this. Certain people come on the show, they say, no prologues. Others say, yes, prologues. We love prologues.
Right.
Yours is short and sweet and hints at what's coming. At what point did your prologue come, and what did you want of it? What did you want it to do?
Yeah, okay. So I understand the argument. You know, I think the book worked without it. The only, how did it come about? Well, there's a tonal thing going on where I'm taking a kind of tight, intimate literary story, and I'm allowing another genre to mesh in, float into it, okay, which is just a personal thing. A lot of times I'm reading these great literary things, they kind of have a little edge to them, and then they never, I don't know, they never pop out, and I always kind of, not always, but often want them to, and feel like they don't, just because, you know, professors have dictated that you shouldn't do that, and blah, blah, blah. So, also, Patricia Highsmith used to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, and so, and it worked, and it was great, but I don't know. If she did it now, would there just be this argument, oh, it's not really literary anymore or something? And I just wanted to sort of, so the prologue basically was, you know, if you had a scale, it was just a way to put a tiny pebble on the scale to keep a tonal balance. You know, it might be like a piece of music if it started out with just a note in E, because you know later on you're going to get to the E in a certain way, and you just want to have a hint of it. I felt that that's what that was about.
Hmm. I like prologues. And I love short prologues too. I think yours hit it just right.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to take a real short break, so stay with us. We'll be back with more Norman Olstad and French Girl with Mother, so don't go anywhere.
They say time heals a broken heart. Days go by and the healing starts. They say life goes on. Well, I can't prove it, but I know they're wrong. I can't sleep, I can't eat, I don't seem to be able to get back on my feet. I can't run, I can't hide, and it's tearing me up inside. Oh, have mercy, baby. Love's been rough on me. I had love, but it turned out wrong. I had faith, and when that was gone, well, at least I had hope. But you left me hanging at the end of my.
To Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we've been with Norman Olstad from the start. French Girl with Mother is his new book. Before we bring him back on, if you're just tuning in, know that this show, along with many, many others, will be podcast within the next week or so. And if you want to know when it's podcast so you can hear it from the beginning, the best way to do it is to go to iTunes and subscribe to Writers on Writing on iTunes podcasts. And if you listen to the show, you've listened before, if you leave us a review, that would be great. It'll help others find the show more easily on iTunes. You can also see Norman in February. He'll be down here in Orange County at the Speaker Series. If you want to know more about that, go to penonfire.com. And you'll read about what's going on. So I can't wait to see him in person again. And I think what we're going to do is bring him back on. Hey there.
Hi.
Hi. Before the break, we talked about the prologue to French Girl with Mother. I'm always curious about beginnings because I know novels, memoirs, all writing hopefully goes through a lot of revision before it sees light. And I'm curious about your beginning, if your first chapter was always the first chapter.
I think that the first chapter, I don't have a perfect memory of this, but my sense is, I have a vague sense that it started earlier because, I mean, you have to one way or the other. You either do it in your head. I mean, I do a lot of it in my head or make notes. And then you find an entry point, which is something I spend a lot of time doing with anything I'm going to write, fiction, nonfiction. It's one way that helps me find what I call the voice or the tone, the sound of the piece, because that dictates the laws of, you pretty quickly dictate the laws of your tone or voice. And so I spent a lot of time playing around with that, trying to find, and then I can sort of guess, okay, if I enter here and this is sort of this point of view that I'm starting to wield, how's that going to give me access to what I want to do down the line that I've sort of thought out? Oh, it's going to close me off here. It's going to be really hard to get there from here, you know, gracefully or in a logical way. So I guess that's the long answer to your question.
So then how much do you know? How much did you know going in? I mean, I don't know what your relationship with plotting or outlining is, but sort of like maybe give us sort of a little window into your process.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everybody's different. I mean, some of us are the same, but there's a lot of, like, I heard an interview with Per Petersen, the Out Stealing Horses. I think he's Norwegian. And he doesn't want to know anything and just writes a word down and then follows it by another word. So that's pretty extraordinary. I like to, actually, this is what I like to do, I've learned, is that I try not to put pen to paper at all while I'm thinking about something. Maybe a note, like a one-sentence note, a kind of moment or something, a kernel of emotion or a slice of something that happened. But I don't want to get too deep or too solidified. I want to stay kind of wishy-washy in the beginning. This is my personal process. And think about the people. And the way to think about them is, what do they do when X happens? Or, you know, I think that's the best way to sort of extricate character is through choices they make. This is all, you know, people have been saying this forever. But so I'm following that process. And I like to really give myself time. Like, to me, this book was about the women, Anais and her mother, Sophie. You know, that's where my heart was. That's who I thought about all the time. The painter, you know, could be done more easily, and I just had more access to it. It's not necessarily me, but I knew that that wasn't going to be the hardest part of the work, although all the work is hard. So with the women, I thought about them and, you know, thought about them in the chateau, thought about what they did before my main character arrives at the chateau and meets them, just kind of had this sort of daydreamed about their personal lives, you know, how they interacted, what happened. And then, of course, at a certain point, you kind of run out of, or I run out of steam there because there's no context. So then I might start trying to say, okay, you know, you try to start at the beginning. Every once in a while, you got to bounce out and go forward and just kind of write something down the line to kind of jiggle things up, and then you come back. But so then you start writing, and then you realize, okay, I'm now I need, because I've got them here and this is sort of where I want to be, I need to go back into the, you know, I guess some people call it backstory. And so where did this all come from? And then I would sort of think that out and write about it a little bit. And then, you know, all the time I'm still, even though I'm writing, I'm playing with the tone and the voice. And at a certain point, you read it over one morning and you go, oh yeah, this is it. This is the right tone. Now I'm on, the train is running down the right tracks. And then it gets real intense. I mean, then the sort of more brutal writing begins. Yeah, I guess that's the process. I mean, I had an interesting thing where I can't remember her first name. The poet, maybe it's Louise Gluck. Okay, so I was thinking about Anaïs and Sophie, mother and daughter, a lot, and I needed like some sort of image. I needed some sort of thing that I couldn't conjure up. And there was a poem I was reading of hers about, I think it's with her mother. She writes about her, seems to write about her mother, at least in the collection I was reading a lot. And there was something about having her put sand on her legs at the beach or something, and there was this kind of reference to like a, sort of a spider-like kind of smothering. And that's when it just all, it was like right on the tip of my tongue, and I was like, oh yeah, no, I got it. You know, like this is, now I know the Sophie Anaïs thing. I you know, that's what I've been looking for, is that, you know, somehow expressed in a way that I could sort of get my claws into it. And then, you know, usually I take from life, but here I took from somebody else's life that got transformed into poetry. Just a detail that set off a whole bunch of other stuff that came from my life, but I needed that little spark from somewhere else to get going.
So, okay, so you said you start by thinking about the characters and the choices they make. So how much time goes into that? I mean, at what point do you start writing the book? You know, I mean, how much time do you spend trying to figure out characters before you get going?
Well, that's why I begin with what I know. Again, another thing that's spoken of a lot. But, you know, I come from life, from experiences that have affected me in a way that I want to write about them. So I'm not just conjuring them out of the blue. And often I do that when I'm working on something else. So when I was working on Gravity, sort of a companion piece to Crazy for the Storm, I was thinking a lot about writing nonfiction, and then it sort of floated. That's when it began to float, that, oh, maybe it's going to be fiction. That's when I started thinking about the characters. And that way it's not too serious. It's not like I have to come up with something because now, you know, it's before me. You know, I'm working on something else and it doesn't really count. I'm just kind of dabbling over here when I'm taking a few days off to kind of get some perspective on the thing I'm working on. And so that it just sort of building in the background, and that one probably built for a year because I had to do this outside piece, which was kind of a big piece, and then I was doing the nonfiction piece, which is pretty substantial. So there was about a year of working on those two things that I was thinking about this. And also the other thing I should say is that I had written a book, a draft of something that has a little bit of French Girl with Mother in it. So I'd already sort of explored it. It didn't work ultimately, but I was able to use that as a kind of exercise to get where, you know, to some sort of starting point with French Girl with Mother. And then, you know, the day comes where, you know, okay, I've got all these ideas, I've been thinking about them, I've been playing with the voice, and I don't know, it just kind of emerges like, you know, I'm just going to start doing it now. I'm not exactly sure how.
Mm-hmm.
They crystallize in a certain way, or I'm in a position where I need them to, and so they just have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, I just want to circle back one thing, and then by in doing this process for me, that's where I find how to begin a book. I find an entry point because I've sort of done all this stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to start, you know, with Nathan wandering around Europe for 3 months. I'm going to start with that behind him, and the moment that changes, there's sort of this change that's going to happen when he's going to land on this person that he thinks might help him. And so that's the entry point.
Hmm. So the piece that you started, or the book that you started that you said didn't work, how did you know it didn't work? Why didn't it work?
Oh, for me personally, it didn't work because I wasn't really true to myself. I was kind of trying to be, I was trying to totally change my voice. I was trying to kind of, not that you shouldn't. I mean, I always change a little bit, but I was just trying to be something. I was trying to make it something that it wasn't organic to my point of view. I think I was trying to do what's kind of in now, you know, a little more kind of talking about what's in somebody's head, and not, I like to make scenes that then reveal what the person's feeling, but not sort of meditate on it and write about it, which is fine to do. It's just not my thing. And then you just sort of getting into, I think it happens to anybody, you sort of get sucked into kind of what's going on, and then I lost myself in there, you know, but it only cost me 3 or 4 months. I just did a draft, and it was a good learning experience because I learned, not that you shouldn't try things and try to expand, but just that it just was not me.
You know, I love that you say you only use 3 to 4 months and you know, and it was okay to throw it out, because it seems to me that so often writers, we become so married to the material on the page. And if we, you know, if we have to get rid of any of it, we just, you know, we want to have, you know, throw a conniption because it's like we've spent months and now we can't use it and how horrible. But, you know, it all adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it all adds up. It's not wasted. I've talked about this a lot with other writers. I mean, you're not wasting something. Even if you spend a year and it doesn't work, you are working something out. That's what's happening. You're working something out, and you're learning from it. And, I mean, talking about getting rid of stuff, I mean, I sort of suffer, you know, I haven't heard the full force of this, but, you know, sometimes I get the sense that there's certain people that don't like my distilled writing. It's very distilled. I've spent a lot of time boiling things down, and I do get rid of a lot of what I write. You know, it's just not as so I think that should, you know, don't worry about throwing stuff out. I think that's a good thing. It's not really trending right now. You know, there's 800-page books left and right, but it's still, in the long run, it'll always be a great way to write, and it will always be appreciated by readers.
Well, yeah, you know, I like the size novel that you wrote. I happen to like that. I like long novels too, but, you know, I think there's something to be said for distilling it down. And, what I wanted to talk about was how French Girl with Mother sort of begins rather calmly and then kind of turns dark. And for me, this size book is perfect for that. You know, it just kind of goes to it as it needs to.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's like a little, it's a little experience. It's what you said, right? It starts and then it starts to turn, and hopefully that's the joy of it, you know? It's kind of like a great little painting or a piece of music that just kind of goes right there, hits it, and that's the experience. And that's sort of where I'm at in terms of that, you know, just kind of wanting to have that experience myself and wanting the reader to have that experience for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure why. I sort of really enjoy that experience.
Yeah, me too. We have a lot to talk about, and whatever we don't talk about today, we're going to talk about when you come down in February to the speaker series. But earlier you mentioned, writing fiction from life, and I was curious if there are particular novels that inspire you or writers that inspire you who do that.
I think Jhumpa Lahiri does it very well. Am I pronouncing her name right? You mean writing from life?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like her short stories are really expressions of her experience as being, of Indian descent and having sort of the American sort of confrontation, and beautiful and elegant and yet really resonate emotionally for me. Some of the old school guys, obviously Hemingway, and I think James Salter did it a lot, brought him up again. I can't always tell, if they're just coming right from life. I want to feel like they are, and so, that's a sensation I want to feel when I'm reading. Not always, but a lot of the time I want to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cormac McCarthy and obviously Jim Harrison was a lot. Too bad he's not around. We'll never get books like that again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just gone. Nobody can be that loose, so to speak. And
talk about voice, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just great voice. Unencumbered by any sort of academic, political pressure. Just letting it roll. That's going to be tough to get, now.
Speaking of academic pressure, I'm trying to recall whether you went through an MFA program or whether, kind of how you came to writing.
Well, I was lucky enough to take Carolyn C's writing classes at UCLA, undergraduate, and then I also was doing the undergraduate film school at UCLA. I don't know if they have that anymore. But and so it was a good, because the film school was heavily biased towards writing. So it was perfect for me. It also helped me exercise a muscle that a lot of literary writers don't get to do, which is storytelling, scenes, making getting things out of characters and out of moments through the moment and not through the voice of the writer,
mm-hmm.
Which is, it's a good balance to have, because it's just it's very satisfying as a reader, I believe, to sort of intimate, get a little understanding of what's going on without being told what's going on. And so you sort of discover it as a reader. So that was helpful. And then when I graduated, I had a choice. Okay, do I want to apply and do that whole thing, or should I just go travel? And I decided I'm just going to go travel. For about 10 years, I pretty much was alone the whole time. And I would come back and work and then go off for 6 months and work and go off for 6 months. And traveled all over the world and ran into people because I was alone. There was no wall built up between me and a friend or a group of friends. It was just me, and I had to kind of fend for myself and stumble into things and just wake up each day and wonder what was going to happen. And that was my MFA.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote during it, and just tried to watch myself in the world, watch myself change, and watch other people and watch, you know, how they acted and sort of draw from each different culture and experience. And it was just a wonderful time for me. I mean, it was lonely a lot of the time, but I was okay with that, even though, you know, sometimes in the moment I was lonely. But that was it. That was kind of how I did it.
Kind of experience life so you have something to write about?
Yeah, right, exactly.
There's an idea.
Yeah.
Hi, we have a minute left. I wonder if you have any sort of advice or words of wisdom for the listeners who may be working their way through a book and having a little hard time, maybe.
Okay, you know, maybe I'm a little bit shy about giving advice, but maybe one little piece of it will resonate and help. I think you've got to just do your thing. What you're trying to do, keep doing it. Try to learn from the reactions you're getting from what you're doing. You know, you got to share it with other writers and stuff, and you get feedback. It doesn't mean you make changes to everything somebody's telling you, but you can learn, well, that comes through when I kind of set up these dynamics, or when I kind of lay something out this way, it seems to be coming through, and it doesn't when I do this. And so you can start to learn, you know, where your strengths are and try to improve your weaknesses. I think it's very much like sports, where you can almost cross train and try to find ways to bolster your imagination and your knowledge and your experience through exploring different stuff and not just being a, you know, quote unquote writer, because I don't know really what that's going to generate. So that would be my advice.
That's great. Perfect. And we have so much more to talk about in February. So thank you for being here, and I look forward to seeing you.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to seeing you too.
Great. That was Norman Olstead. His book is French Girl with Mother, published by Counterpoint. You can find out more by going to penonfire.com. I'm losing my voice. See you here next week.